Now I'd like to introduce tonight's speaker. He's come here all the way from Fresno, paid for his own gas to come down and share his experience, take his friends and hope with us. His name's Tony. He's from Fresno, like I said. His favorite AA, he actually has two favorite AA models. One Day at a Time and Live and Let Live. He has a sobriety date of, get this, March 17th of 1987. Welcome, Tony. Come on up, Tony.
Thanks. I said earlier, my name is Tony and I'm an alcoholic. And, you know, my drinking career started in 1962. Some of you weren't even born then. And we won't ask you how old you are, but what's interesting about that is in 1962 is when I first had my first drink of Manischewitz wine. That's when my mom was cooking and she offered me a little wine and I thought, tastes good. I don't recall drinking more or sneaking any more of the Manischewitz wine, but you know what? That effect was there already. I can, even as I'm talking about it right now, I can actually smell that particular Manischewitz, you know, wine. Then, of course, I'm also a recovering Catholic, so I was a good altar boy. Never stole from from the wine rack that they had in the back. But the other thing was, I still already had this calling, and it wasn't a religious one. It was something to do with alcohol. Because I can clearly recall when I was at the altar pouring the wine, the aroma that came out of that, out of the jug, if you want, I could smell it, and it was kind of calling me, but I never really tasted it. Nowadays, for any of those that are participating, you can go and actually taste the wine, and I'm going, damn, but that's not what I want to do anymore. The real collapse of my alcohol started in 1969, and that was when I went away to college as a freshman down in Southern California. I went to a private school down there, and we used to have, it was in August actually, August of 1969, there used to be a place called The Wash, and we would go over there and they would have a TGID, which stood for Thank God I'm Drunk. And I remember that first TGID Friday. I got drunker than a snot. I was sick the next morning. Actually, I was sick all night. But I also remember that the next day, even though it was Saturday and I was hungover, I was already waiting for the next Friday to come. Alcohol had taken its victory. So I can tell you a lot more drinking stories about my life, but that was just kind of the beginning of what happened. Part of by the way, I may be, and if you know of others, that's okay. It's not a boast. It's just somebody mentioned it to me some time ago, and he said, you're the only one that I know that's been locked up in the only three countries in North America. And I thought, I'll tell you how I got to that one in a while. So we know the three countries, right? You've got Canada, you've got the United States, and you've got Mexico. I lived in Mexico City for a number of years as well. But in any case, there was a time when I was going to school and I was more interested in getting drunk than going to class.
and I don't know if any of you can identify with it happened, and it has nothing to do with going to class. It has everything to do with your next drink. So I hope that you can see that portion of it, and it's not a question of what degree or degrees I had and certificates or any of that stuff. It's just a question of, as I mentioned earlier, alcohol had already captured this victim. When I was, I got married when I was 21, and I was already drinking. I had a, I met a lady in Mexico City, and Miguel over there said, when I said Miguel, he said, "Damn, you speak Spanish?" I said, "Yeah." You'll hear my story in a bit. So I happened to get married to this young woman who had her family had a very long political tie in the Mexican government. Her uncle had been one of the insurgents back in the early revolutionary days in the early 1900s. From that, he became the Secretary of the Navy. He also went on to be the Governor of Veracruz. And I don't know, and it just happens in politics, whether it's here, there, or anywhere else. If you've got a strong political ties, you end up with strong political commitments that people owe you. So I thought it was kind of cool because her mother, after her father died, married a naval captain who happened to be the purchasing agent for the entire Secretary of the Navy, or for the Naval Department. And one of the things that they used to do was give him a lot of booze. And I remember when, after I graduated and went to Mexico to live, before meals, he was already having, he had this huge library. It was probably 30 feet long by maybe 20 feet wide. It was a library, but it was behind almost every book there was a bottle of booze or something. And he enjoyed having his drinks before his meal. And I was always enjoying going up just before the meal time to say, "Hey, you want to play some chess?" Because that always meant, "Let's go have some drinks." So we did that for a while, and one of the things that I also used to enjoy doing was whenever we had parties at his home, there was at the end of the evening, there's dishes to be picked up from all the people that were drinking. And one of the things that I used to really enjoy doing was I used to enjoy helping to pick up, even though we had people there that were serving at the home, helping to pick up the drinks afterwards. Because, God, people were leaving some really expensive shit in the glasses. I'm talking about really expensive cognac, some really expensive scotch and whiskey. I can go on that stuff. And I couldn't understand that. So, of course, at the end of the night, a few people were actually looking at what anybody was doing, but I was just kind of drinking up what I could on the way over to the kitchen. The fact is that I kept looking for that next drink, and I kept on selling myself short of who I could actually be. I want to say this also to anyone who's here that's a newcomer, because one of the things that's really important to me is that anybody who is new and anybody who came up to the stage, when I said, "I'm glad you're here," I truly meant it. See, because today could be the first day of your life. Depending on where you want to be in your life,
Over the number of years that I've been sober, I've seen a lot of people go out and come back and go out and come back. And I've always, it took a while for me when someone would raise their hand again as a newcomer to understand something that was very, very critical to that person and to me. One was not to judge them. See, because I'm very opinionated. And one of the things that I would love to do is look at a person and say, yeah, well, shit, I know what he did, or I know what she did. You know, they're just not paying attention. And the other thing that I learned was that if I don't judge you when you come in, whether it's the first time or the 100th time, the one thing that I've learned here, because I've always been welcome at an AA meeting, is to know that I'm welcome to, and that I'm home. If you judge someone when they've gone out and have come back in, I'm here to say you really need to look at what your own reason for judging that person is. Because I used to do it. And what I found out when I started to do that was I started to find out that, you see, when I started judging you, I realized that what I was trying to do was be better than you. And it took a while to learn that. If you're doing that, you hit that reset button anytime you want. But there's something also very important in my road to recovery. I'm not recovered. I'm in the process of being of recovery. Is that when I look at the people out there, and I know that you're here for whatever reason. I got here because a judge sentenced me to come to AA meetings. Back then, they were smoke-filled rooms, believe it or not. Maybe some of the older folks here might remember that, but they were pretty smoke-filled rooms. And I did not, I didn't particularly like going to those rooms, but I went anyway. Going back to what I was saying about, you know, judging people and knowing who you are through all this process is, if anyone out there is here because you're on a court card, well, I hope you hear something, if not from me, from other meetings that you come to that make you want to keep coming back. If you're anything like me, when I was starting my road to my drinking, I was one that could say, you know, I can stop anytime I want. I don't need you to tell me. I don't need her to tell me. I can stop whenever I want. And that was probably one of the biggest lies I've ever told myself. Another thing that I've learned in Alcoholics Anonymous, I'll show you in a few minutes how I've learned these things, but one of the things that I've also learned is that honesty is a long voyage. Because for me, what I've learned is what I am today is a result of how honest I have been throughout my entire life. It didn't start when I started drinking. It started when I started behaving. It's some of my behavior, or many times it's been a lot of my behavior, that's gotten me into a lot of problems. In Mexico, one of the things that I did was, when I got there, was I had a good degree. I had gone to a good school. I was bilingual. I thought I would be able to get a job anytime I wanted. And one of the things that happened was I got into some of the top companies, you know, in Mexico, because the majority of the organizations, corporations are in Mexico. But one of the things I found out was, as soon as they realized that I was not a Mexican citizen, it turned into being just a very nice conversation. So, you hear a lot about these people that cross the border illegally. You're looking at one. It's just that I went not from south to north. I went from north to south. And eventually I ended up having an aunt of mine help me get a false birth certificate, a false military card. And if anybody, you know, lived in Mexico and you were 18 and, you know, came over after that, you'll know what I'm talking about. And then getting my tax ID. Once I had all of that, in a snap, I was hired. The interesting thing was that my wife at that time got sick of my drinking and not being very honest in our marriage. So one day, I actually had, here it's called ICE, although there's an immigration, knocking at my door at the office and asking me to go with them if they had some questions for me. And what I found when I ended up talking to a few people was that my wife or her sister, who also I managed to piss off one day, geez, imagine that, right? We went for lunch one day to have her talk to me and try to counsel me on knowing that my marriage was not doing very well. She just wanted to be a friend and kind of say, you know, maybe you should think about doing this or that. And she was eating and I was drinking. And that was the lunch, because I was drinking martinis. And at about the fifth martini, I ended up telling her what I thought of her. I had forgotten that she also had a very strong position in the Mexican government as being a private secretary to one of the Secretary of State. And that didn't help much. So in any case, when I'm at immigration, they pull out all the original fake documents that I had. And they said, well, they didn't say much other than the fact that I was going to serve a hell of a lot of time unless I paid a certain amount of money. There, it's called mordidas. For those of you who are not familiar with that, it's kind of like a payola. And I had, fortunately, some friends, and some of my friends came to my aid, and then they found out that I worked for a government agency, and the undersecretary of the agency that I worked for called the undersecretary of theirs and said, hey, you know, what's going on? So they didn't go the route they wanted to go, and they just said, okay, you've got 3 days to get out of Mexico. But I was also held for a few hours, and eventually I paid the fine and I left the country. At that point in time, I then had a daughter with my wife at that time. And she was born in 1977. Now, I have not seen her since 1978. As a result of my not being very honest. After that, I came to the United States, got divorced, and started to date a very beautiful young woman at that time who ended up becoming my second wife. And surprised she didn't get rid of me, but she didn't, and she held me, and And that's been very important in my life, simply because my drinking career never stopped, you see. I mean, during all this time, it was never my fault that all this stuff was happening to me. And there was a time when, in my drinking career, I had a stepbrother who he and I used to love to drink. And we would go off to restaurants. And I don't know if any of you, live down in Southern California, but in Chinatown, there's a couple of nice restaurants there, and we happened to, it was called Little Joe's there, in case anybody knows that place. But we one day were drinking and decided that people wanted us to go home, meaning our families. We did not want to go home. So if any of you have ever followed the Cheech and Chong movies, the up and smoke thing kind of stuff, remember where Cheech and Chong kind of go underneath the table and all of a sudden, they pop up and, their face is full of this powdery stuff. Well, we didn't pop up with a whole bunch of powdery stuff on our face, but we happened to just get underneath the tables and stay under there trying to hide from our families, who knew, of course, where we were. And, that's stuff. Those are some memories that my wife sometimes reminds me of. Some other things that my wife has reminded me of, and, this is not something that I'm very proud of, but I'll tell you this because this is part of my story. I remember, if you can, and the only reason why I remember this is because my wife reminded me of it, or actually told me about it. I was in a blackout once. Well, that's kind of an understatement. I was in a blackout a bunch of times, but in this particular time, I was home. I don't know how I got there, but that guy was home. And according to my wife, my mother called. And I answered the phone. And the only reason why I remember what, again, as I said, what I said to my mother was because my wife told me the next day, "Do you remember what you said to your mother?" And I said, "I didn't even know she called." She said, "Well, she did. And you answered." And I was somewhat hesitant to ask, part of it because I was in denial. And she proceeded to tell me that I'd asked my mother to give me a blowjob. So, have I done some things in blackouts? Yeah. And I've probably done a few other things that I just can't remember. I will tell you another thing that I did that I wasn't very proud of when I was in Mexico was during a New Year's Eve celebration. One of the family members had a gun, and we were on one side of the freeway trying to blow out a street light on the other side of the freeway, and we were taking shots at it. And the one thing that I still clearly remember is that right next door, or right next to it, at whatever distance it was a set of family apartments. God knows if any one of the bullets that I fired hit anyone. I have absolutely no idea. But you know what? We thought it was funny. I did some things. It was in 1986, right about this time when the World Series was going on, and I forgot the guy's name at first base in Boston that had the ball go right through his legs, and then Boston Red Sox lost the game. But that was the next time that actually I visited a drug tank because I got arrested for a DUI. And eventually pleaded it out, but I had an attorney who listened to the tape of my of the officers going running through the whole test, And he didn't have to hear a lot to realize that it was that I was drunk. So we just proceeded to plead it out, and I didn't particularly like that particular scenario. One of the things that I mentioned as well was that it took me a long time, and still, it's a work in progress for me, the whole idea of being honest. And I said earlier that the majority of the things that I have done in the past, and even with my sponsees, that come up and say, gee, you know what, I don't understand why this company is asking me to do such and such a thing, you know, when I got arrested for drugs, possession of drugs, and, you know, drinking, and that, and that, you know, why are they doing this? And the one thing that I think about is, well, what was your pardon? And they don't always have much to say after that. But regardless, in my second marriage, one of the things that we got to do was we got to bury our first daughter. Not because of any drugs or alcohol. She lived one day. We did not expect that. And it was a difficult situation in my life. And this was before I got sober. But regardless, it was not a pleasant experience. It wasn't until my 19th year of sobriety when my second wife realized that I was not being very forthright in my commitment to my marriage vows that things started to change for me. I was 19 years sober. And I say this simply because my character defects have always played a part in my life. They still do. And my character defects on a daily basis are always there. Now, I keep talking about the character defects and being honest and what's all this mean? I'll summarize this as quickly as I can, but I've got about 5 minutes left. After I got arrested here in this country, I haven't told you about Canada, I'll get there in a second. And I got forced to go to this stuff called AA. And it was really interesting because by the time I got to the first meeting and I started to hear people tell their stories about some of the problems and some of the feelings that they were having, I thought, damn, these people know who I really am. And it took a while. I've worked a number of 12 steps, 5 steps, but more importantly, the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous. For those of you who've just been, you know, I think someone said they were here for 10 days. There might be somebody here who has a few days less than that. I can tell you that today I woke up late, so I've been sober since probably about 5 o'clock this morning. That's the extent of my sobriety. See, because today is all I have. And I've learned that regardless of whether my sobriety date is 1987 or not, what I realize that today is the day that I live. Doesn't have anything to do with yesterday, because that's gone. If I do an inventory of my day, I can always go back and take a look and see where have I gone wrong. But that one more time comes from working the steps, realizing that my life was unmanageable. You know, that I was powerless over alcohol and my life had become unmanageable. And then jumping into the second step, realizing that I had to find power greater than myself. And then turning it over to that higher power. See, that, those first three steps are extremely important to those that are struggling with maybe their fourth step. Because depending on how strong you're, it takes work too. Depending on how strong your association with a higher power of your own understanding, I don't ask anybody here to believe in my God or in my higher power. You determine who your own higher power is. But Believe me, that higher power has to be one of your own understanding and how important that higher power is going to play in the rest of your, through the rest of your steps and truly through the rest of your life. So if you go into your fourth step and do a thorough inventory, I didn't do a very thorough inventory. If not, I would not have been as uncommitted to my second life as I was. Because one of the things that you start finding out is those character defects. And the question is, how important, how serious was I in doing those steps? And truly identifying what my part in it was, and then making the amends. And then on a daily basis, for me, the seventh step prayer is extremely important. And then going on to the eighth step, and the ninth step, and then of course, you know, the 10, 11, and 12 steps are extremely important once you've gone through the first nine. They call the 10, 11, 12 maintenance steps. But, you know, what's important to me is that today I can live with myself. I can look at my wife and tell her that I love her indeed. I can tell her that, that you know, I was wrong for everything that I've done. And you know what? I don't have to live that way again today. And that is a result of working, you know, these 12 steps. So, the Canadian story is kind of interesting. I was working for a, just about done here. I was working in for a company that sent me to Canada. A, in case anybody knows their little sayings. But I got to Vancouver and was there. Immigration popped, went through. Actually, I went through customs first, and they said, "What are you here for?" And I told them what I was there for. And I don't know what was my face must have been reading guilty of something. And the officer, the customs officer, said, "You know, you're going to need to go over to that little corner over there." So I did, and all of a sudden, immigration came up, and they started talking to me, and I said, "Have you ever been arrested?" And I said, "Yeah." And they said, "What have you been arrested for?" And I said, I was arrested for a misdemeanor and for drunk driving. And they said, "Hmm." So they looked at my passport, ran me through, and this is the reason why I hate Canadians. Are there any Canadians here? There are. Yes, one over there. Yes. Hey, no. Okay. Well, I, yes. Well, as I said, remember, honesty is one of the things we have to work on. That's okay. So in any case, the one thing that they said to me was, "Well, we're going to give you," and I was like, "God, I'm back in Mexico." They said, "We're going to give you 3 days, and then we have to leave the country." Deja vu all over again. And then they said to me, "If you ever want to come back into Canada, you're going to have to ask for permission, because their laws are different than ours, you see, and it's CA. And if you go to Canada and have been arrested here in this country and you have a misdemeanor, that moves up to a felony there." Didn't know that. So anytime we play in professional sports or anything else, the Canadians, winter Olympics, Summer Olympics, I don't care, you know, lacrosse, poker, who cares, you know, I hate them. But in all honesty, here's what I've also learned. They were doing their job. And one more time, my history, my behavior had come to, not necessarily haunt me, but back to remind me of what I had done. And the only way that goes away for me today is by practicing the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous, and by making sure that my behavior today is a lot different than it was a few years back. So, be kind to yourself, do no harm, work the steps, call your sponsor, be of service. And to all of those who have been of service here today, including the nice gentleman that stopped me at in the parking lot and said, "Are you parking in the handicap parking lot?" And I said, "Yeah." And I said, "Yep." He says, "Where's your, I don't see this sticker on your car." And I said, "I've got the placard on the dash." He says, "Well, you need to put it on the rear view mirror." And I said, "Okay." See, in the past, I would have loved to have said, "Don't you know who the fuck I am?" Well, I'm the speaker. No. Like today. You know, baseball's going on right now. Don't they know who I am? You know? But regardless, be of service. And, you know, have a nice day unless you have other plans. And thanks for letting me be a citizen.